What trajectory is LaMelo Ball on? Can the Kings figure it out? Does the NBA suffer from boring offense? The only question left is, say it with me, you win. Hey, sports fans, Coach Nick here, and welcome to the B-Ball Breakdown Live Green Room Show. I am coming at you both on the Green Room and YouTube side. I think I sort of figured it out, and believe it or not, the weird solution was to half plug in the quarter-inch jack into my soundboard, and that somehow got the good sound from my iPad out into my computer. Maybe somebody who knows about audio can explain why that seems to work, but we'll find out with the old phantom power from my nice mic and then the plugged-in power with our plugged-in audio from the iPad. Very strange, but I think it'll work. So if people want to join the show, come on in, just request to speak. And I'll bring you in. We talk, a nice group discussion about the NBA every time we do the Green Room. So if you're out there over on the YouTube side, then get that Green Room app. Find me a B-Ball Breakdown. Join the show. And we can chop it up directly. And it'll be broadcast out to the YouTube side, which is usually even a bigger audience. So certainly we got to kind of talk about – I don't even know what to talk about. We had a trade the other day with involving Lauri Markkanen and Larry Nance Jr., which we could discuss a little bit here. But how am I sounding? Everybody over on the Green Room, let me know. Is my mic working? I'm going to tap my mic on the Green Room side. Can you guys hear that? Ben, Brian, let me know. I'm getting a weird thing where it says there's nobody in the room, even though there's people in the room. So I wonder if the Green Room app is functioning properly. But let me know if it is working right over in the discussion, if you can. And if you're over on the YouTube side, come on in and chop it up with me over here. But let me know if this is working, please. People are flashing in and out in the room, and I don't know anybody in the discussion. So let me know that this is working. It looks like it's working okay. And if you want to come on in, just hit that request. Oh, here we go. Brian wants to come on. Let's find out if it's working over to the YouTube side. So, Brian, what's happening, my man?
Hey, what's good, Coach? Yeah, I'll just let you know the mic's working. Like, so I can't type the discussion to Android Live.
All right, awesome. And I think that the levels look pretty good over to YouTube, too. So how you feeling this morning?
Yeah, I'm doing good. As a Laker fan, man, I ain't going to lie, though, the more and more players that get added to this roster, the more and more worried I get.
you mean you, Rondo doesn't make you feel better?
There is such a thing as having too many cooks in the kitchen. I'm not wrong, right?
Well, yeah, but like Rondo is probably like more of a sous chef than a cook these days, right? Like he's a waiter, or I don't know. But I mean, I would be obviously much more worried about how the Russ thing is going to fit alongside the other two versus anything else. I think everything else is sort of window dressing at this point. But I don't know. You can't like I always bet against LeBron every year, and every year I'm generally proven wrong. So I don't even know what to make of it. But I don't know about you, but I'm really excited to see it. Right, like at the very least, I'm very curious in some sort of fascination of whether or not this will work. Right, I mean that's what's going to capture people's imaginations most.
I mean, like I said, I've gone on record on my podcast saying I think it's going to be a beautiful train wreck.
But yeah.
Like, that's honestly what it feels like. But I will say, if LeBron finds a way to make this work, to me, will probably be the second most impressive thing he's done in his career.
Okay. Okay. Right? Yeah, that's probably – if they can make this work. So what's the top of the list of the things that you're worried about that aren't going to work?
Honestly, just the LeBron-Westbrook dynamic, it's – I just don't see how it works in a playoff setting. I'm not worried about regular season. Like, yeah. Talent trumps everything in the regular season. They should win 50-plus games easily, no questions asked. But when it comes to the playoff setting, we've seen how teams defend Westbrook in the half court in the playoffs. We've seen how Westbrook's style isn't effective in the playoffs for a multitude of reasons.
Well, that's true, too, but also it's the turnovers, right? I think that when he starts throwing turnovers and we start seeing LeBron give that stare, like they're not going to bench him, and he would have those guys benched in a second when that happens. So that's what's going to be interesting. But maybe Russ doesn't make the turnovers. Maybe because he's handling the ball less, and LeBron is dominating the ball more. Maybe Russ ends up being a great shooting guard.
But to me, that's interesting because just like we've never seen Russ really become that type of player, and to think he's going to do it now at age 32,
right? We saw it for a couple months before the COVID shut down the season in Houston. I did see it. Harden dominated the ball. He was playing off ball. Remember, it was kind of ugly in the beginning of the year when they were doubling Harden off of Russ, and he was just – he could not handle that. It was weird in space. But he got better at it, and I thought he was playing really, really well. There was like a – it was a long stretch. It was like 2 months, maybe more. Yeah.
But let's also keep in mind, Houston literally had to throw out their entire offensive playbook and get rid of Capella to make that happen.
Right.
You have to change so much to make Westbrook effective in that type of atmosphere. It's interesting, and I'm so curious to see how LeBron's going to handle that when it's Russ's man who's just sagging in the paint.
Yeah, and absolutely.
Cutting from the corner like D-Wade would in Miami.
Yeah, no, it's a combination. It's both. It's the shots he's going to take and the threes and the sagging off. And then, you know, the defensive stuff too. We'll have to find out whether or not that can get better with him out there or not. But like, you know, but it's also it's the personalities as well. Like Russ is not going to stand anybody criticizing him or getting on him, even if it is LeBron, right? I can't imagine that happening. So, but who knows? Maybe they're all long in the tooth, getting up there in age, and they're going to behave like, you know, good teammates. So we shall see. But I don't know. We got a lot of other people here in the show.
Yeah, quick question.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm a huge Charlotte Hornets fan. And there was a point in time last year, I want to say right after LaMelo became a starter, like officially after his first like three games, where I honestly was watching and I couldn't name like, I want to say 10 point guards better than him from at a good point of the season with like his length, his passing ability. He's so creative off the dribble, all that stuff. And I think people are kind of underrating the leap I think he's going to take with like the full keys to the offense next year. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on, you know, how LaMelo is going to develop next year and the kind of the young talent that they got brought over there in Charlotte.
Oh, for sure. Well, here's the thing. Like, you know, the highlights speak very loudly for a guy that, you know, that age and is a rookie. But if you did dive through all the footage, you're going to see lots of, you know, problematic stuff that typical rookies go through, especially at that position. So it wasn't like he was charmed and like had the most amazing, you know, rookie year of all time. He had his share of clunkiness as well. So, which is good. Like I would expect that to happen for a guy like that. And the good part about that is that there isn't a lot of upside and there's no question that he'll build upon that and he'll reduce some of the mistakes. And then, you know, the next year he'll reduce more. He's on a trajectory to be an all-star without question. And one of the most entertaining players out there right now. It's funny because I say this all the time. Lonzo must be looking at that like upset because they pretty much like eliminated all that from his game, right? They don't let him, they made him into a shooting guard basically when he needs to be, there needs to be like a new position invented for that. I suppose with LaMelo, it is a bit of a sort of a traditional point guard, Magic Johnson style guard. And with Lonzo, they've like, he should do the same things. He could throw those passes. He can run the break. He could do a lot of different stuff. And instead he's kind of spotting up. He hands off the ball to start the offense. He doesn't really get a lot of opportunities, but, Charlotte's building something. It's not exactly clear what's happening yet. It's a bit of a mishmash, but, there's no question that, LaMelo is league pass alert every time he gets out in the court. And, I love it. He throws the Pete Maravich style passes and more. Mm-hmm. He shoots from deep, he's probably just a joy to play with. So that's only going to help them win games and be better.
For sure, yeah. And then just two more things. One, so yeah, going to LaMelo and Lonzo, I think that the thing that I kind of think that separates them so early on is the fact that, but it just really doesn't seem like LaMelo cares about what anybody has to say about
him. Right.
He's going to go out there and he's not going to be like, I'm just going to sit on the 3-point line and shoot threes. He wants to, you know, make an impact on the game. It's not going to be a game where you look in, he has 5 shot attempts. Like, that's never going to happen. Mm-hmm. And I think the last thing is, I think people are underrating the move of DeRozan to the Bulls. I hear a lot of it's the worst offseason move and spacing and all that stuff. I think putting a high level score next to Zach and Vooch is going to be troubling the East.
I hear you. I did the video on it, and I think it's going to work. I mean, listen, the offense should not be the worry at all for the Bulls. That's not going to be the issue. They're all really good passers. You know, DeRozan made it work in San Antonio without the quote unquote spacing that like he doesn't provide. They'll have it across the board with other places, even as far as Vucevic being able to space. But it's their pass. They all pass. Like the thing that's going under the radar is DeRozan had a career high in assists per game last year. And it wasn't all just sort of like, you know, a quick drive and a kick and easy pass for the open shot. He was getting in the air and firing skip passes across the court for open threes. So you should see a lot of that. The real question is going to be the defense. And I know someone was on Twitter, like, you know, yelling at me about how bad DeRozan is on defense. And I got to take a deep dive because nothing stands out in my mind of him being like completely, utterly a disaster on that end. And you have to imagine with the balance on offense they have, and, you know, they don't have to use up all their energy on that end. They can, like, even like Zach LaVine, who we saw make some defensive plays on Team USA, you know, he might be able to be better defensively as well. And the Donovan had a 12th ranked defense with that team last year. So imagine, exactly. I know it's a totally revamped roster, but if he could get the 12th ranked defense out of that team, which I don't think, I mean, he had a couple of defenders out there, then maybe he gets 12th again. Even if they're above average, then that's a legit playoff team, I would say.
Mm-hmm. And I think the thing that they have helping them that's going to like relieve some of that, you know, maybe they're not the best on-ball defenders, is they're very athletic, not including, you know, Vucevic. So they can switch. Patrick Williams is real athletic, can switch a lot of things. So
yeah,
they'll be able to switch onto a lot of different guards and stuff like that. But hopefully they all buy in.
Right. And then let's look at who they have on defense now, too. They have Lonzo, who's a terrific defender. Patrick Williams has got a lot of energy and makes plays on that end. Even like Kobe White, it can defend. I'm trying to think. There's at least one or two other guys in that roster that are actually like defenders.
Gary Jones.
So, yeah. Oh, they just picked up Jones Jr. and they got rid of Markkanen, who wasn't a great defender. It's too bad. I would have liked to see Markkanen maybe blend in with this and give him more spacing. But I'm also glad to see him get a shot where he should get a lot of opportunities and get back to where he was. He should be a better player than he was in the last couple of years with the Bulls. All right, let's see. Let me just take care of a couple things. I mean, I see some chats over here or some comments over on the YouTube side. What's up, M. Scott Lawrence? Nice. Thanks for being part of the conversation for so long. And here's a question. I'll grab it from the comments over on YouTube. Give me your all Southpaw starting five. Cannot use Harden or Simmons. Current players only. Oh my goodness gracious sakes alive! Only current players. How many lefties are there out there right now? And I can't use Harden or Simmons. I don't know, man. That's a tough question. who else is lefty out there that I would like?
Joe Ingles.
Isaiah Thomas.
Joe Ingles.
Joe Ingles? Okay, I guess we'll put Ingles on there. I don't think we put Isaiah on there. I don't know. Is he on a roster right now?
No, not currently.
Yeah, so I don't know if we put Isaiah.
He's got the point guard spot.
Gosh. By the way, I'm the charter member of the Kelly Oubre fan club. I even have I made up a little card. I'll have to share it on, you know, Twitter.
Even after this year, coach.
Yeah. Listen, he plays defense. He hustles. He makes plays. Oh, what? He didn't shoot so well. He had some troubles, but I can't give up on the guy just yet. So,
I have one more.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
D'Angelo Russell.
You know, I don't know, man. D'Angelo Russell is a tough one. He's a tough one with culture-wise, whatever. But I was going through someone's clips, and Russell suddenly popped up with some of his assists. And they're still pretty nasty. He'll throw dimes that are, like, you know, way unconventional. He deserves a little bit of hype. Maybe I'll even do a video on that and go through if I can find a juicy, like, 20 good assists from him. Because he's always been able to – I saw him with the Lakers throw – like, he could throw a curveball. Like, literally, the ball curves in the air, like, between defenders. I've never seen much like that. You know, of course, leave it to a lefty to come up with that kind of stuff. So he might deserve a little bit more hype, but I don't know if it's all great and sunshines and rainbows with him on the team as far as his effect on other players. Zion absolutely has to be the very top of the list. The Zion's going to have just a destructive year. He's going to embarrass players. He might lead the league in scoring. I thought he was going to lead the league in scoring last year, but the injuries and whatever got in the way. But the dude shoots 60-some percent. Like, he's going to lead the league in scoring, and it's going to be easy.
Will he embarrass his team and coaches by making them look bad as well with what they
– you're talking about Zion?
Yeah, that was just you saying that he'll embarrass everyone, and I was thinking, will he also embarrass them with what
they've done? Well, I mean, they still have Ingram – right, and they got rid of Lonzo. So let's actually, I have to remember now. What did the Pelicans do besides that? Who did they get for Lonzo? Remind me.
Devontae Graham.
Devontae Graham. Oh, they got
signed him in the agency,
right?
That's a good pickup. Now, Paulo Graham, he did not have a good year.
He's not efficient at all.
Yeah, he actually, and then he went backwards after his second year, which was really an eye opener. And then when he shot, he actually continued to shoot the same from three, 37.5%, which is good to see.
Goal percentage is like horrible.
You have to hope that maybe it'll get better being on a better team, like alongside those guys. It has to. He's not going to shoot 38% again. I would predict he'll get over 40. 30. But that might not be great, but it'll be better. But yeah, that's a real big question mark. New coach. It's an interesting whole thing what's going on there. And we're waiting for the tell-all from Stan or whoever. I'm really curious to hear more about why that fell apart so quickly.
He just was never the right coach, right? He's been out of touch since his Detroit days, right? So
yeah,
it just didn't really make sense. Maybe it was like to try to get a culture change.
Full disclosure, you know, Stan was an assistant when I was a basketball manager at Wisconsin. So you know, I worked with the guy for 2 years, you know, that was a long time ago. And I guess the question then is, was he coaching 1994 style in 2020? Like, and that, if that's the case, then yeah, at that level and at that age difference between him and the players, I could see where that would become a problem. And it just never really worked. I mean, I guess it was a curious decision when they brought him in the first place. And so, you know, we'll see what happens now with this, the new coach. But wait, who do they hire now? Who's in New Orleans?
Willie Green.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Now, Willie Green, I've talked to him. I know him a little bit. Really interesting guy and also open. Like the guys that I talk to a lot of times, I get out there, man. I get a little bit crazy when I start talking about basketball and like fundamentals, and you know, we kind of, you know, I push the boundaries, and he was interested. Like that's a good sign for me, that here's a guy that's open to stuff and has a good sense of like what the modern game is. So I would anticipate some good stuff. And plus, you know, he was with the Warriors and learned a lot about how they're going to build that offense. I would anticipate they could do some similar stuff there to open up things for Zion. But you don't have to do much for Zion. He's just going to dominate no matter what.
Yeah. What do you think of him, all that stuff? Like, why is his timeline so, like, sped up, I guess you can say? Like, they want to, like, win, like, immediately in the playoffs, like, right now, like, why is that?
Right. It's a good question. I mean, I think that the time that with a player like that, who's going to be a perennial all-star, you know, I bet you there are already teams that are, you know, lightly recruiting him as it is. Right. So the clock is ticking. His rookie contract isn't forever. And at some point, if he feels like they're not, and we've seen this with LeBron, we saw it with Michael, like those guys took years and years. Like Michael took 7 years before they got a team around him good enough to compete for a championship. No one's going to wait around that long anymore. And so I could feel like that must be part of it. They already have, you know, they had a core around him that seemed to be on the way to getting there. They brought in like Steven Adams is a guy you bring in if you want to like really, you know, take another step, right? And they had Ingram around him and they had Lei Alonso. So I could see how, like, all of a sudden, as if there's too much tumultuousness, there's too many coaching changes, too much roster change, that just kind of like turns a player off. And then next thing you know, he wants to leave. And when that idea creeps into the head, if it's year two, if it's year three, if it's right before the contract ends, I don't know. It's really hard to change that, right? Like at some point, like it grows and metastasizes and then it's gone. And you realize it was a decision he made years before and that you couldn't, you know, that you could have gotten a control of early. So I suppose that has to all be part of it.
But the thing with Zion, right, with the whole COVID and everything, like his first year, he barely played or anything. And that was the COVID year, right? And then they stopped playing, right? And then he goes into – he plays a little bit in the bubble, and he goes straight into his second year. So it's like he had 2 years, but it was like in 1 year kind of thing. I don't think he's even played 82 games yet.
No. He definitely has. And that, by the way, that is probably the biggest worry of all time. So you're right. You want to develop him, and you want to give him a chance to get settled. But I mean, he's that good without having to shoot threes in an era where that doesn't seem to be possible. Like I guarantee you, like I think he's going to score 30 a game, and that should lead the league. And he's going to
put
shoot
up 27 this year. So it's like, and he didn't know what he's doing. So
right, and he shot 61%. Like, and it's the type of shots though. That's the key. And as long as Willie Green like continues to have the same kind of handoffs and spacing that they got in the other, even with Van Gundy, then the shots, the easy shots, that's how the key is. It was like just easy dunks around the rim, explosive moves that got him moving toward the middle.
I think he did a video on it, right? I think it was either a few years ago or how they always would start him on the right side of the court so he'd go to his dominant side and then drive to the left, like those type of plays.
Totally. And that's the thing that like coaches need to understand at all levels is you want to put your players in the best situation so they can attack with their strongest hand. Even in the NBA, Zion's not the greatest example because he's so lefty dominant, right? Like he does a little bit with the right hand dribble a little bit, but he clearly favors the left hand. And a lot of pros clearly are better going in one direction than the other. So it's good to have your offense designed that way where you're getting them in the right the positions where they can then attack. And obviously on the right side of the floor means, he's turning into the middle with that left hand. And then it's over. If he gets within within a few feet of the lane, it's forget about it. You cannot stop that guy. And you won't stop him for, I would say, 10 years, maybe longer. Oh, by the way, really quickly, Big Los, you're right. Jalen Brunson, I can't believe I didn't throw out him as a lefty. He's on the top of my favorite player list for sure. But what's up? What's up in the chat? What else do we want to talk about?
Well, if I may, real quick on the Zion Williamson. I live here in Brooklyn, so I got a lot of Knicks fans. I'm a Nets fan. I got a lot of Knicks fans around me. Remember when he was asked that question about playing in Madison Square Garden? And he was so giddy that he couldn't wipe the smile off his face.
right.
So that's why David Griffin. I love David Griffin. I used to listen to him and be a daily call-in, weekly call-in when he had a show on Sirius XM with him and Joe Myers.
Yeah.
So I'm a big fan of David Griffin. He has to do everything he can now to prevent him from considering, because they lost Chris Paul almost more than a decade ago. Then you lost Anthony Davis. They were granted a number one pick again, when a lot of Knicks fans felt jaded because they didn't get the number one or two pick. You know, they wind up with R.J. Barrett. Yeah. So you can see the New York Knicks, they re-signed Julius Randle for now. If I had to say what their plans are real quick, they'll probably want to pair Julius Randle with a guy like Damian Lillard, which I don't think they should pursue right now. Maybe in the offseason if you can get Bradley Beal on that same timeline with them. But, he's already flirting with one of the big markets out there. So for a small market team like New Orleans, who just lost two stars within the past 15 years or so, they got to do everything they can now to win and appease them. Like, all right, we may not be the big, sexy, glamorous market, but if we're winning, we're playing deep into the playoffs every year, you shouldn't want to leave.
Great call. And thank you. I gave you a gem for that one. A great, great point well. I'm not exactly sure why New York, he's not from there or whatever, but I guess, if anybody would be a savior to the Knicks, like you'd be the king of the NBA forever. Now, the thing with Randle, though, listen, I'm really happy for Randle. I actually coached in the same high school tournament when he was in high school, when he was a sophomore. Same size. He was that same size as a sophomore as he is now. It's crazy. I'm really happy for him. He got paid. He had a really nice season, but I do feel like there's a very distinct ceiling for the Knicks in the playoffs, specifically with him as their guy. Yeah. And obviously, if they ever got Zion, then he becomes completely expendable because they're pretty much a similar player, but Randall's less explosive. But that makes me worry that Randle is the guy who they're going to rely on. And we saw in the playoffs last year, it's just
not sold on him in the playoffs.
Yeah, the mid-range attack that way with the kind of shots he was getting when you're going up against good defensive teams, I just think it's a recipe for disaster versus like in the regular season where you can do some damage and you can win some games. I feel like at some point the Knicks went on a big run. I did a video on them and they were like 500-ish. And once the video came out, they went on a run. And all of a sudden, they were – what did they end up, fourth in the conference? They were not expecting that at all. And that put them in a whole different framework where now they're playing against, in a different – whole. Rather than being in the eighth seed and having, taking their lumps, getting some good experience, they were like, oh, maybe we're expected to win this. And I think that was completely off. It changed their timeline. But Knicks fans are probably not going to want to hear that, and they're going to obviously going to expect
that's
more.
The crazy thing. Like, it's so – I see it on Twitter a lot. Like, their expectations are so – unrealistic to me. Like, I look at that team, it's like they're okay. Like, who they don't have a top, not even a top, 15 guy on their team, right? So it's like you put them against any other team, it's like you never have the best player in that series with with any of the top probably five teams in the East. And it's just, I just don't think that team is constructed
well. And then you have, you know, Tibbs, who is notorious for doing these improvements right away and usually in the market on the defensive side. And listen, like, you know, Mitchell Robinson, I really, really like, and I wish he would just get all the minutes at center, as many as he could. Nerlens Noel comes in there and plays well and deserves to get another shot at another contract as well. But, like, you know, I hope it doesn't come to the point where Mitchell Robinson's not starting or he's only getting like 18 a game because they want to play Noel that many more minutes or whatever. But, you know, I don't know what's going to happen with this team. I'm going to do a video this week on them. I'll do it on Monday or Tuesday. And, you know, we have to look at how it's going to work. Like, they did improve a little bit, but why don't I wait? Where's Fournier? I'm looking at their I'm on B-Ball Ref. That's weird. They didn't put him. Why don't I see Fournier on there? Oh, there he is. I'm sorry. Gosh. So Fournier is going to be an interesting upgrade. He's one of those other guys who in the regular season can really help you. I don't know what happens in the playoffs, honestly, with him.
Yeah.
But he is solid. And then they bring in Kemba. They sign Derrick Rose. You're right. It's a weird lineup mishmashed together.
And they have
a bunch of guys at the end and a bunch of guys in the beginning of their careers. So I don't know.
They have promising young players, but with all the veteran signings they had, it's like they're not going to – how are they going to get any playing time?
Right, and that's Tibbs' M.O. He doesn't like to play the young guys anyway. So, like, Emmanuel Quickley, who I really, really like and think should be a lead guard, you know, he's going to get his minutes limited by both Kemba and Derrick Rose. Although Kemba is, you know, I hate to say it, he breaks down a lot, and I don't necessarily think he's going to make it through, even though I generally try and ignore and assume people are going to be healthy. With Kemba, it's tough after the last several years. Obi Toppin, like, what do we have from him? Is it, you know, it's fits and starts. Maybe he's going to be solid. I don't know. I'm still not quite sold. And then you have R.J. Barrett, who he seems to be on that track, and they're piping him to be the next, you know, great guard out of New York. But anyone sold on that yet?
He's okay. I think the thing with him is definitely his off the dribble game would have to come along a lot, and he would need the ball in his hands a little bit to create, but he's not going to, just based off of Randall and Derrick Rose, Kemba. Like, that's going to be over. He's going to be spot up now. Like,
yeah,
I don't and see. That, yeah.
Right, and especially because let's just say they were an eighth seed, they didn't have a lot of pressure to win last year, and like they can really develop and afford to, you know, it might not look perfect, but it'll be in the long run better for them if they quickly, let's say, making mistakes but getting a lot of experience. Now they're going to grind it because they, you know, they play Rose a lot and play Walker because they want to like squeeze out a few extra wins. I have a super chat I want to take care of real quick over on the YouTube side. Don't forget, if you want to get my attention right away on the YouTube and comments, super chat's the way to go. So, Matthias Barreto, thank you so much. Thank you for the very generous super chat. He wants to know KD or LeBron at their primes and right now. So, we know LeBron is not in his prime anymore. KD is probably toward the end of it as well, but he's still, you know, the way he looked in the Team USA.
Really good.
Yeah, you're going to say he's got at least three more years of that, even though he had that crazy injury and he recovered. Who would I take, I guess? Let's see here. Jeez Louise. You can't go wrong. I don't know. I like to be in the Connor class. And yeah, right. I like to get out of the box a little bit. Do I want to take like KD in his prime because he would play center a little bit more than LeBron would? Like
a better rim protector.
That would be the only reason, right? And LeBron, like, there were moments I think in his pre-prime where he was a much better defender, and then he really wasn't that way in his prime because he understood the game and knew, you know, but LeBron never ever really wanted to play defense down low in the post ever. And I can picture like KD guarding like Kevin Love in the finals and like getting battered, but like holding his ground and making it tough on him and blocking a shot or two. So, you know, if I have to base on anything, I might have to go defense, and I might have to go with the fact that KD's just a lot longer and will ultimately play, you know, a little bit more rim protection than LeBron. But that would be the only reason, I suppose.
Coach, if I may, I would say to that question depends on who you want your number two to be. That's how I always face these questions, because I would argue LeBron probably played his best ball, and I, you know, was watching all those Miami games. I think he played his best ball in Cleveland with Kyrie. And I think for Kevin Durant, he probably played his best ball in Golden State, although I greatly appreciate what he's done for us so far in Brooklyn, and hopefully this season he gets it done with the rest of them. That's a very difficult question. If I had to take one in their prime, I would say LeBron. And if I had to take one right now, it's definitely Kevin Durant.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And listen, LeBron's going to be really good. He'll have a really good year. But we've been seeing over the last few years cracks in the armor where, you know, you're seeing some evidence of decline. But like his decline from, you know, his prime to where he is now still makes him better than 90% of the NBA, maybe even more. So it's like that decline is, it's weird. But just for him, when you see him miss shots at the rim that he would have just like dunked with his teeth, you know,
yeah,
years
there's
ago.
Been a lot of those lately.
But again, he you know, the mental aspect of it is a thing. But which is why we don't know what the Lakers are going to do, because they're going to need some of that prime LeBron magic to win in the West and then into the finals. So, and especially to beat a team like the Nets if they're healthy. It's what a weird season we had. You know, the Bucks. I just don't know if it's a hot take. The Bucks, you know, weren't going to beat the Nets until Kyrie goes down. Now Kyrie,
not even close.
They lost. The Bucks lost one game with Kyrie healthy in game three, but like no one thought that the Nets were going to sweep them. So that, you know, but it seemed pretty clear to me that like, yeah, you know, they had, and they came within an inch of beating them anyway without Kyrie. And literal inch. And so, you know, it's, and then they go on and win the whole thing. It's crazy. Like they somehow figured it out. Budenholzer goes from a minute from being fired to like an extension. It's crazy how the NBA can work that way. So
he should probably still be fired.
I mean, the things that were the issues didn't change, and we'll find out this year, right? Like, you know, but like, that's why it's on Giannis to adjust.
We've seen it with teams who've won, like there's like a calmness and a confidence about them that they're not like afraid of anything anymore, right? They have nothing to lose. So that's one thing going into this season they do have on their side.
I would have liked to have seen the Bucks to make a little bit of a splash and try and do another upgrade of the roster.
They did. They did. Grayson Allen.
Okay. Yeah, Grayson Allen. I mean, because interestingly enough, so DiVincenzo comes back, right? And he'll be healthy, and that really will help them. Allen is another one of those kind of guys in that mold, although Allen might be – you know, people have slept on him, and he's actually, you know, has some skills.
He's good. Very
he's better
skilled.
Than DiVincenzo. He's better skilled. Than DiVincenzo.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. That's and it's like saying. Sometimes those Duke guys need more time to develop, you know? Like J.J. Redick's come out awesome
well,
out of college.
Well, he's already developed. I just think that he just needs opportunity. Just put the ball in his hands and just see what he can do. And
yeah.
I've seen it for a while.
Yeah, okay. And like R.J. Barrett is another one of those guys where it's like like let's just pretend R.J. gets to where everyone thinks he's going to get to. And I've done videos on him thinking that like he might do it. But, you know, there's a 3 or 4 year arc there for whatever reason. And I don't know if it's a Duke thing or not. But
him coming out of college, coming into college and from high school, he was kind of like a point forward type player. That's what he was. But then when he signed to Duke and then Zion and then Cam Reddish, like you have to share. So. You didn't get to see that type of game.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's an interesting thing with Grayson is, you know, he had a great sophomore year and then completely and should have come out and then stayed and then had a really suboptimal year. Yeah. How many more years did he stay? Was it one or two?
No, he stayed all four.
Yeah. So the last couple of years, right, where like he kind of was going downhill. All the team maybe around him got a little bit better. But
well,
that
was
interesting.
Well, they didn't really have a point guard. So he had to play point basically the whole time because they didn't have anyone who was functioning who could initiate offense. So he was taking the load. He was really just doing that while he could – well, he should be scoring and stuff like that. So that he kind of sacrificed.
Yeah, and as a result, like, you know, and it was a mistake. He should have come out when after that sophomore year. He would have made more money and all that stuff. But, you know, and I did a video. Actually, now I'm remembering. I'm doing a series on the ACC players.
Yeah, I remember.
And I'm going to start that up again ASAP because they I'm a group of guys who were doing all these ACC videos for them. And all my videos did much better than anybody else's. So they really want me to get back to doing them. So I got to get a list of figuring out who more players to do.
Did you do Brogdon yet?
Oh, you know what? I don't think I did. I should do Brogdon. Wait, Brogdon in Virginia?
Yeah.
You
could do a whole bunch of Virginia players, actually.
Yeah. Like, I could do Joe Harris. So the only problem is the access I have to this amazing database of clips only goes back to, like, I want to say 2017. Does that get Joe Harris?
Yes.
No.
Wait, no.
Maybe senior year?
No, maybe. That'd be close. 2016, maybe, right?
Let me look. Because remember, he was in Cleveland. Joe Harris was in Cleveland.
He was when LeBron was there, but he didn't get no playing time. So
yeah, I remember. No, his senior year was 13-14, believe it or not. Harris is a little older.
He's older.
And so, and now he had played 4 years in Virginia, but it was weird. There was a moment when Joe Harris looked really, really good. And I think it was 14-15 in Cleveland. And they gave him, like, you know, he played in 51 games. And I was really impressed. And then, like, all of a sudden, something happened. He was gone, like, the next year after a few games. Very strange, because that, to me, would have been a great – I mean, don't you think they would have needed him in 15,
no, absolutely.
16?
I mean, that's the type of player LeBron needs. Well, likes to play with. But he just never gave him a chance. He didn't get any playing time, never really got to play with. I was like, oh, man, Joe Harris isn't there. If he gets any shots, like –
Yeah, there's a tell-all book there. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing about playing alongside LeBron. Most likely, I don't want to, you know, I don't know any details, but like sometimes I think something happens and LeBron's like, get him out of here. One thing, like, right, really? Like you have to imagine that's Deion probably what happened with, I can understand Deion. I can understand. But like, how about Montrezl Harrell? Like something happened with Montrezl Harrell where they decided he had a player option and the Lakers were going to do everything they could to make sure he didn't want to sign that player option again or he wanted to leave, which is – I know he signed it, but to trade him because he wanted the hell out of there. So, you know, something happens, and again, I don't know if it has to be LeBron or anything else or whatever, but that is interesting. And the Joe Harris thing never made sense to me because there was a moment there when he first got out there. He was nailing threes. He looked like just a really good, polished NBA player coming out of Virginia, and then, boom, he was gone.
And he got a chance at Brooklyn, and then there you go.
Yeah, and then, Kenny Atkinson's there. Like they help him.
Yeah.
No, like Joe Harris is legit, you know, he could start on the Brooklyn Nets and they can win a title with that, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
I mean, it helps when you have, you know, the other three. Go ahead.
I was trying to clear something up. So I'm an NBA fan from London. I try and consume as much of the NBA as I can. But obviously, I favor the teams on the East because the games are run earlier than the teams on the West.
Uh-huh.
The specific question I had was about the Kings, who I honestly never ever watched, but they're always like 3 a.m. games, London time, West Coast. Mm-hmm. I feel like De'Aaron Fox is this name that's thrown around in the sort of like the basketball media world. And I do slightly agree with it that he's not the best version of himself at the Kings. But I also don't think he's a 16-game player. I question in a playoff setting, go like a second round, conference finals, if he could be... So have the ball enough to initiate for himself and anyone else. And if he doesn't, and it's somebody else's job, what is he really doing if the spacing sort of isn't 100% there and teams not expecting him to do too much with this shot? So, I guess why is his name thrown around so much other than the fact that he definitely isn't at his 100% potential? And do you guys think he is a significant?
Yeah, well, that's a great question because, you know, the alarm bells are flashing about, like, bad team, filling up stats on a bad team kind of guy. And if he gets to a good team, all of a sudden maybe he's not as good. You know, Kemba kind of has that swirling around him too, right? Like, he was awesome in Charlotte and they were never really a great team. Then he goes to the better teams and it doesn't work out so well. I mean, the reason why he's on everyone's hype list is because he's an explosive athlete who has a lot of great highlights and he fills up the box score. I mean, he went 25-7 last year. He did not shoot well from three at all, and he hasn't really shot that well in his career. So that's an interesting thing without taking a ton of threes, although last year he took a lot more than normal. So this is probably the year where he's now – like people want to talk about your prime is still when you're like 27, 28. I don't know, man. To me, it's almost like it's your fifth year. When you get to your fifth year in the NBA, that's when we know what you are. I don't know if you're making a huge jump after that, and this is his fifth year. So this is it. It's time for him to, you know, put up or shut up, and it's time for the Kings to do that. They've been kind of wallowing around trying to put together players that sort of fit together. They haven't been able to do it for a long time. Let me just see if their record last year was bad, 31-41 in the 12th in the Western Conference. So this is it for everybody. This is it for Luke. This is it for, you know, De'Aaron Fox, and they're bringing in Davion Mitchell, who I just did a video on, and who I really, really like and think he's going to make him better. But I'm not sure. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, I think it's a bit. It looks like they overachieved the last couple of years, in my opinion, though. I mean, look at their roster. It's not a team that should be getting near the playoffs in the West, and they're always, like, only a couple games off, to be honest.
Okay, that's true. In the new format, they were in the mix a little bit, but and again, I liked some of their players. And like, listen, Marvin Bagley is a guy who I like and thinks has really good potential. And then you go guys like Halliburton, who I think is great. Now, and they like the Halliburton Fox backcourt, but you know, we'll see what Davion Mitchell does, because he could make a guy like De'Aaron Fox expendable, because he really is that good, both offensively and defensively. That's the thing that he brings. And I would imagine he's going to shoot better than Fox. Like, even if Fox improves, and by the way, if you're crunching dried grass, I don't know what that is, then feel free to mute. I think that that's the question. If we start seeing a guy like Davion Mitchell come in and like lockdown defender, and he's nailing 40% of his threes, they have to look at that, because you don't want a guy who's going to shoot five threes a game who's shooting 32% from three. Like, that's a problem if you're talking about like the 16 game playoff, view. And so that's what I'd be looking at. But they're trying to do something when they bring in guys like, you know, Corey Joseph, Harrison Barnes, like the good team guys. Rashawn Holmes is also solid. So that, you're right, they have pieces. And the question now is can Luke Walton do it? And I don't know. He's been there long enough now where he's going to have to do it this year. But here's the question. Luke Walton probably doesn't keep his job unless they make the playoffs. So that's got to be the minimum, I think, right? Like, I don't think they have to be anything. They don't have to be fourth in the West, but they have to make the playoffs, period.
But all the teams in the West are better than them, though, even on paper.
You know,
the injuries in the West are injuries, way better.
You never know what's going to happen.
Injuries, yeah. But just right now.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
They're like the 11th, 12th best team.
I don't think Houston or OKC try, and I think gravity will pull the Spurs down. So yeah. I have them maybe 12th, 13th in the West, yeah. Like best team.
Defense, bro.
Yeah, you know, I guess if you have to put it that way, because let's see, like, are the Pelicans better than them? Like, I'm looking at the standings from last year.
Yeah, they are.
I mean, on paper, they are, of course.
On paper, the Pelicans are, but who the hell knows? It depends on who the next coach going to be.
Right. Yeah.
I got Pels, the Wolves. As better, and they didn't make the playoffs last year, and Grizzlies just about made it, and I have them as better, but then I have OKC and Houston out.
But the Wolves didn't do anything this offseason, right?
I just think
Patrick Beverly.
New coach.
I would say the Timberwolves ain't really, Timberwolves ain't really do nothing, and we still questioning Cat's heart when it comes to like playing defense. Like, Do you got the heart? Do you got the heart? It ain't about his talent. It's about, do you have the heart? Because we've been questioning it ever since Jimmy Butler left.
And there's that question's legitimate, right?
I think it'll be a lot better this year.
When you watch him play, it just looks like he's almost playing at like 70%, to be honest. It doesn't look like he's fully engaged in basketball games, to be honest, right. when I watch him play.
Tony, don't take this the wrong way, but you know, you sound exactly like the player on Ted Lasso in Ted Lasso on the team.
Is that the soccer podcast, the soccer thing?
Yes, the guy who just took a stand against the oil company. I'm forgetting his name, but anyway, you don't watch Ted Lasso?
I'm a European, so like that would just rub me the wrong way. Sorry, I couldn't watch that.
Oh my god, it's not. I don't even know. I don't know. You guys, listen. I just spoke at a coaching clinic, and in the middle of the coaching clinic, I'm like, I will Venmo anybody $20 to get Apple TV Plus, so you can watch the episodes because it's that good. Wait, are you saying like because everyone's so refined as soccer people, like that this show would be beneath them? Is that the idea?
Yeah. I think like we get it's a joke, but it's almost too far. It's almost too far.
It's not even about soccer as a thing. It's really a heartwarming, and as a coach to see the methods he's using, which are what I've been trying to help other coaches understand, are the best ways to do it. I know it's a scripted show, so you can force all these scenarios to work, but it's great to watch.
But what my opinion, I think American coaches are better than European coaches in terms of both soccer and basketball. So it might be interesting.
That's interesting.
It actually depends on the sport. If it's soccer, European coaches are more better.
I mean, obviously, in terms of that, but in terms of like the way American coaches go around things, I think it's better.
I've heard some nightmare stuff about European coaches who kind of sound like the old school coaches.
Look at my profile. Like, it's compulsory. I watched enough EuroLeague. The coaches, they're good, but they're crazy. It's only their way or the highway.
By the way, we have that in America too. So let's not pretend that doesn't exist.
Yeah, I hear you.
They have coaching,
every single time there's timeout, they put the cameras and the microphones in, and the players get berated every second. Luka used to get taken out every game. Every time Luka took a step back, he got taken out of the game. Every time he took a step back, any piece of skill, they took him out of the game and they started berating him at the end of every game.
Yeah, no, and I've certainly seen a lot of that. And you're right. Like, they're kind of probably more like the college coaches are here.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't like the college.
Me neither. So that's an interesting point. Great point. Let's give Tony a gem. But you do sound just like the guy who is one of my all-time favorite characters. It's so funny. But
I don't know. I guess I'll watch him now.
Now I have a question on the Eastern Conference, though.
Uh-huh.
We know about Brooklyn, and we know about Milwaukee. Everybody said, like, I'm a Bulls fan. They said they ain't got my Bulls like top four, top five, top six, and stuff like that. But I'm like, wait a minute. Really, three through ten on the East, that's really wide open. Because, like, I see some of the teams in the East really ain't do much of nothing outside of us. Miami, for real.
The Hawks signed John Collins, which is big, but yeah, they didn't add anything really.
And then you got New York, but I see New York falling off. I see Philly falling off. I see Boston falling off. So I'm like, besides them two, what would y'all as far as the playoffs, what would y'all eight teams be?
So,
I would say 10 if you want to count the play-in. But I'm going to say 8. 8 can make it.
Yeah, and then we got to count the 10 because they're going to do it again this year. And interestingly, I'm digging it. So here's the thing, because in the video I did, and I mentioned it a few minutes ago too in the show, was, okay, obviously the offense for the Bulls should not be an issue at all. They're going to be a top – in the offensive rating, they're going to be a top 7 team, and they have to be, right? With that kind of firepower, they have to be top 5, 6, 7, right? And defensively, like I mentioned, they were 12th last year with that team, and I know they lost the lefty guy who was throwing all the dimes. Thad Young, but they have enough defenders right now, and Billy Donovan has shown that he can build a good defense, a very, very good defense across the board his whole NBA career. So if they were 12th last year, I doubt they're going to be less than 12th this year. Let's just say they're 10th. Now you got a top 10 offense and a top 10 defense. That's almost basically the criteria you need to be a championship team, much less, you know, fourth in the conference. So you're right, DeAndre. Like, that could easily get them a fourth seed minimum. I would be surprised if they're any lower than that.
Yeah.
And that's a hot take, I guess, but I don't know. I think the Bulls could do it.
Yeah, I mean, that ain't really a hot take because it's like that's what most of the Bulls fans would be expecting. Where last year we were expecting them to be a playing team, and we actually was. We was just a Zach LaVine COVID-19 sit down 11 games sit down for COVID away.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's the thing.
Zach LaVine never had that. We was in there. Because we was two games out of it.
The sad truth is going to be that injuries, I think, are going to all dictate what's going to happen again this year. By the way, I'm praying this isn't what's happening going forward, but like last year was terrible, right? Last year, injuries determined the entire season. In fact, all the way to the finals and who won. So I hope we can get away from that, but I kind of feel like it's getting worse and then getting better. And until they can figure out if it's a schedule thing, I don't know, because it didn't feel like, you know, they've been trying to make the schedule easier and easier, and it didn't seem to help that end as far as back-to-backs and three nights, three games and four nights. So I don't know what's going to happen, but that is the sad case. And if that happens, I worry that the ratings will continue to fall even more. I mean, the ratings were 50% down from 2 years ago in the finals. I know it was the two teams as well, but that's a problem.
I mean, I think the Fathers had the scheduling last season. I think they was rushing to get back. Cause, oh man, we got the playoff. Oh, we need to go ahead and get back. I think they rushed back a little bit. Cause if you really think about it, two teams that was in the bubble, Miami and the Lakers, they got bounced out in the first round, both of them. And both of them had injuries too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so
absolutely right, and we can't overlook that. I mean, it was interesting because to me, even though the bubble happened and then they started up again, you know, if you think about it, only like four of the teams played, you know, in a to the point where it was kind of a tight window to come right back again. I mean, roughly eight of those teams didn't even play in the bubble, so they had like a ridiculous amount of time off, and it still felt like we had, you know, that issue. So hopefully, with a relatively normal offseason right now, where they have a couple months off to recover and recoup, we'll avoid that. But that's got to be a concern these days. And until we have a season that's normal, or whatever normal is now, where we don't have these devastating injuries that are directly affecting wins and standings, I'm not going to feel good about it.
Yeah.
See, what else we have? Anybody out there? Oh, go ahead.
Because I was going to say is like, because, see, it's like, I know I'm changing the subject a bit, but I'm not a LeBron fan. Don't get me wrong. I'm not a LeBron fan. I'm not even a Jordan fan. My guy already retired. My guy already retired. I was an Allen Iverson fan. My guy already retired. But as far as LeBron goes, like, if LeBron would have lost that, if he would have lost that bubbles, that quote unquote Mickey Mouse championship, we would be creaming him and have everybody else saying, oh, that's the hardest thing. But because LeBron won, he got a Mickey Mouse bubble. He got a Mickey Mouse ring and this, that. And then this year, he couldn't even get it out to get them out the first round with. I'm like, look.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, a couple different things about like stuff like that. So LeBron not winning, or had he lost that finals, would have been devastating, I think, for his legacy. Chris Paul, by the way, avoided a devastating legacy of his by playing pretty well in the finals. But if he had not played well, then I worried for him.
We was already creaming him. We was already creaming him because he can't. Oh, when it matters most, when it mattered most, he ran up. I mean,
yeah, I mean, but he broke down. He got hurt. You know, and he was able to come back. So thank God, in my mind, because it's been pretty quiet about that, right? None of those whispers of Chris Paul stuff in the offseason.
Because I was like, how everybody going to get mad at a person who had to really carry the load from his days with the New Orleans Hornets, who's now the Pelicans. Now, with the days of New Orleans Hornets, who he had to be the man, to the Clippers, which with Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan, to which he had to carry the load as far as shooting wise. Then he had to play with James Harden, who was supposed to have been the one to carry the load, but he never shared the ball with Chris Paul like that. And then he messed his hamstring up the game six, I want to say. Was it game six or game five? When he messed his hamstring up, when they was up 3-2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I hear you.
We have some other people in. Let's bring some other people in who've been in the show. Want to bring something in here? I want to make sure I get to them.
Go ahead.
The show ends. So, what do we have? Anybody else out there who wants to throw some stuff out there?
Hey, Coach.
Yeah, Al, go ahead.
Thank you. I kind of joined late, so I'm sorry if it's like a repetitive question. I was wondering, do you feel like in terms of like the offensive and defensive schemes, the league is kind of becoming oversimplified? And if so, do you think between a heliocentric offensive scheme and maybe like an egalitarian offensive scheme, Which do you think has like a higher ceiling overall?
Wow. Great. Those are great questions. So the thing about the low ratings to me, it makes me concerned is maybe that the league is becoming like sort of the same. Everyone's playing the same kind of offense. They're all running pistol action, handoffs into ball screens and whatnot. And so that's less interesting. Whereas in the past, you'd have very distinct, you know, kinds of attacks that were, you know, pleasing to the eye for fans. Now, if we're talking about overall like effectiveness for winning, I mean, I think it depends on the team you have. The Rockets obviously tried to do the heliocentric style where they looked at the offense and what the point of what's the point of basketball is to have more points than the other team, right? So offensively, well, how can we distill this this time on that end of the floor to make sure that like our best player is dictating most of the plays to ensure the best shots overall? Now we saw what happened with that, right? It kind of wore James Harden down,
sizzle out,
and he fizzled out in the playoffs. And what we've seen from like you know the teams like the Warriors, who are much more of an egalitarian, move the ball, spacing, player movement, and ball movement at the same time, to me is pleasing to the eye, and I think to a lot of people because it's just so much more dynamic and stimulating. In theory, it doesn't feel as predictable. And then certainly from a defensive standpoint, I'm probably always going to err on the side of let's not ISO so much. You know, let's get some movement. And if you want to do some pick and roll or whatever, that might ultimately force a switch into an ISO. Okay, but let's get ball movement before that because what Steve Kerr has talked about in the past, like on my show, and even and Phil Jackson in the past has talked about is when players get to touch the ball, and not talking about shooting it, but touch the ball, feel it in their hands, yes,
rhythm.
They feel a part of the offense. They feel part of the game, and they might actually play harder on defense. And we've seen players every once in a while come out and say, all I freaking do is just stand in the corner, and every fifth possession I touch the ball, and I get to, maybe I shoot it. I'm going to do a video on this, and I keep threatening to do this. I was doing one on Pat Connaughton and how well he played for them in the finals and for the Bucks. And when you look at him on offense, all he did for 90% of the possessions was go to the left corner and stand there.
Yes, sir, of course.
And it's like, I could do that. Like, you know, I mean, I could
be
do
fair,
that, but like,
to be fair, yeah. I wouldn't want Pat Connaughton doing anything else.
I mean, okay, so in the era of like multi-positional skill, whatever, what we're starting to find out based on the offense that we're running is that two or three of these positions at one time are just standing there. Maybe they go from the corner to the wing after about 5 or 6 seconds, and then they stand there for a while. So
that's true.
I think that there's a problem there, I think that ultimately needs to be rectified. I would think. So does that cover your question now?
Yes, sir, of course. And I have just one more if other people are all right with it.
Sure.
Yes, sir. I feel like for the past couple of years in the finals, especially, or in the playoffs at least, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like it's kind of highlighted the importance of the mid-range with Chris Middleton helping out Giannis and, of course, Kawhi being a really good mid-range shooter. So, is the over-reliance on like analytics kind of ruining basketball? And if so, do you feel like the mid-range might become a lost art? And for the players who are really professional mid-range shooters like KD and Kyrie and those type of players, do you think they should just keep doing what they're doing? Or do you think like changing any sort of like changing their game would kind of negatively impact their team in like a bigger picture?
Yeah. Okay. So a bunch of things happening in that question. It's a great question. So the argument tends to be that the stars never stop taking the mid range because they're the stars, right? Yes, yes. And there's probably validity to that as well. Where I get concerned is you want the Connaughtons to not shoot mid range because when they looked at it in the macro sense years ago and realized that the mid range wasn't efficient, they looked at everybody shooting it. And the problem is that there's a lot of those guys in that data set that the defense wants to shoot, you know, long twos. So it would make sense that, okay, that looked a lot less efficient than maybe it was because you had certain guys to take those shots that shouldn't be. So my concern is that in the training of how we go about, you know, in the off seasons and working on it, and then this goes down to lower levels as well, if you start to ignore those shots when you're training, then you don't really have that in your bag later. And what happens in the playoffs when the good defensive teams will run you off the line and they're going to wall you off from the paint? What do you have left? you have mid-range, and you have to take. Well, if you haven't been taking those shots in the regular season, how do you expect to make them under the highest pressure of the season in the playoffs? Yes, sir. That means you need to take them in the regular season. And my take on it is if you train it properly, then you could be a proficient at it. And that's the key for anybody, a role player or a star. And so I feel like we need to be able to have that in the bag. Now, that said, the shot fake one dribble pull up that we used to do from 18, like, I get it. It's now a shot fake side dribble, and you stay down the line and shoot the open three. Like, those are the ones we don't want to change. But there are certainly, you know, I would say 10% of our threes that are taken overall, maybe more, are shouldn't be taken. They're taken in the name of just getting threes up, whereas and that reason explains why the three-point percentage, despite having probably more good shooters across the board now than ever, that three-point percentage across the board from the NBA average never goes up.
Yes, sir.
And that's probably the reason, is because they're jacking up more of these that shouldn't be, that would probably turn into a few more mid-range and then maybe a few more at the rim than they could have gotten there. And so, but I think it's a training thing. I think that we need to get back to doing a little bit more training in the in very specific circumstances. Now, I got to kind of wrap my head around what those are, because obviously, just like we take the threes because they're more efficient when they're in certain positions, there are better long twos than other long twos. And that's the key there that we need to kind of unlock. And I think if we do that, then we'll probably start to see that percentage creep up, and then it makes it more worth it. A really quick take on this. The reason why we went away from post-ups is because they looked at the synergy analytics and realized the post-up points per possession was not efficient enough, but they weren't charting them properly. If you were to do a good, strong post move and miss, but then get the rebound and put it right back in, that should be considered the same move because you collapsed the defense and you created that shot out of the post-up. But they don't count that as the same. That's a putback, as a separate category. When you included putbacks, we did a smaller sample size across, you know, half of a season. Somebody did it for me. We realized that it makes the points per percentage really, really strong when you include those possessions. And so as a result, we changed the entire way we play the game on almost like a false premise. And so we have to be very careful with all those stats and how we look at them.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much.
You got it. Thanks. Great questions. Yeah. All right. Well, we're getting toward the end of the show here. I mean, it's a Sunday. Hopefully the weather's out. It's nice for you guys. But I'll take a few more questions as we wrap it up. So Coach, throw it out there. Yeah.
I have leading into next season with the rule changes with the offense, with the offense players not being able to lead in and stuff like that, and with the full training camp teams are going to be able to have to practice defense and schemes and all that. Do you think the scoring will be down this year?
That's a good question. Yeah, because obviously the defense is what should benefit the most in my mind from having a full training camp and all those things. Although, you know, I've been to plenty of training camps and I've seen practices. And the defense ends up being, 30% of the practice anyway, right? Well, although it's still important to have. I would hope that we would just have better overall play, period. I feel like I wasn't happy with the play. I would get distracted during games last year and just sort of like not want to watch because it got kind of ragged and ugly and up and down and like pickup looking. So I would hope that overall it would just be a better product and more refined and more and polished. But I don't know. I mean, I think the only way we're going to see a slowdown of the scoring or the offensive rating stuff is if the three-point shot becomes less of a weapon, or if they start missing more of those. And I don't see that quite happening yet. We're getting to a point, I think, although I bet you if we checked, we might have already hit the peak of three-point frequency. I know it was over 50% for the Rockets in a couple of those years. They're obviously going back away from that a little bit more now that the D'Antoni is gone and Morey. But so I wonder if we're starting to see just a little bit of a crest and then maybe a little bit of a downslope of the three-point frequency. And that actually might tune us up into a more like better offensive ratings. And then we're going to eventually, after 10, 12, 15 years of this, figure out exactly what the sweet spot is for three-point frequency versus the two-point shots, and then you'll just see a level off, I would imagine. You can't keep growing. It's like the economy. The economy can't keep growing. We're in for crashes. The NBA, offenses cannot keep scoring more and more, as far as I'm concerned. And by the way, I invented a new defense And I'm going to post little bits and pieces of it to show you guys in that vein, because the offensive ratings continue to go up and up and up year over year. We have to do something radical to change the way we play defense. I think I might have come up with something that will at least put a dent in that. We'll see. So that is what we have to get out of the box a little bit more of defensively and start coming up with more creative things. My defense is a zone where you play kind of like how Jazz played Harden in the playoffs a couple of years ago, where they played behind him, and then they had Rudy Gobert shadow him on the block. I kind of designed a zone that is like that altogether. And if it's played properly and you play behind the ball on the perimeter, then you can't set ball screens and you really can't shoot threes. So imagine a defense that will take that away, even if it's for 10 or 12 or 14 possessions. It's pretty powerful. I think I'm dialing it in and figuring how to teach it better as we invented it from scratch. And that's a real key. And then if NBA defenses can figure that out, then we'll start to see more of an effect.
Coach, just to jump in quickly, yes. What you said. Are the kids nowadays not shooting more threes, though? Just like the kids that are coming up across the world, just with what they're seeing. So are we potentially not going to have more and more drafts? I guess it can't exponentially go up forever, but are we not going to have more drafts with big men who are shooting, your wings who are shooting, just because what they've seen and what their coaches are rewarding when they're sort of making it? Just a quick counter to sort of threes going down with obviously the current crop. I'm just thinking of rookies that will be coming in the next sort of 5 to 10 years, they've been shooting threes on pickup courts in early AU setups, in intramurals in Europe, etc. It's just a
yeah. I've been saying this for. Yeah, well, I've been saying this for a long time. We're like, we're gonna have 10 Steph Currys eventually. You know, all the 10-year-olds who were watching Steph Curry 5 years ago, they're gonna get to be, you know, 20, 21 coming in the league, and we're gonna have that. Like, we've seen it. Like Trae Young is sort of in that vein. I know I'm missing at least Luka. It doesn't really count, but we're gonna see other guys in. I know I'm forgetting other players. I mean, listen, a lot of guards kind of play a little bit like Steph Curry, right? Well, how about like LaMelo? So we're going to see more and more of that for sure. And then the big men too. And I don't blame them as a big man or as a coach coaching big men for all these years. I never understood why they'd be willing to just go from block to block, getting beaten on the whole time and never getting a chance to like catch the ball on the perimeter and do something. I'd always try and get my big man out there a little bit, just to throw him a bone, you know, let him have something out there, because otherwise it's got to be just kind of an unenjoyable game. So I get it, and we'll see that. But, you know, we also might see, you know, a return to some of the bigger bruising players too as they get better with their footwork, and we can continue to train that. And if I can get it out there long enough where it's like, no, the points per possession on post-ups aren't as low as you think they are because they weren't categorized properly, then we probably will see some teams that will go get offensive rebounds. I mean, heck, you saw Milwaukee do that. Milwaukee's offense was terrible in the NBA Finals, I thought, as far as X's and O's and the way they ran it. But they just hammered the Suns and the boards and got second chance points so often that was a difference in these games. Without question in my mind, the offensive rebound decided the finals. And it's the kind of thing that most NBA teams have been going away from for years and years and not doing that. So here you go. All of a sudden, there's a team that out of nowhere, boom, starts getting offensive boards, and they win the whole thing. So we'll see a return to some other things that we've seen in the past without question. Another super chat before we wrap up. Thank you, thank you, thank you. No limits. Really thank you for the generous super chat. How do you think height and weight affects a player's speed, agility, and shooting ability? Also, what do you think is the best height for a point guard play style? Well, I mean, obviously, as far as the height and weight affect the players like speed, agility, if you get too big, if you get to like when you saw Dwight Howard, huge upper body, tiny legs, and he had back problems. Like, okay, that was a no-brainer. It was easy to call at some point in his career. And then obviously the really big shoulder guys, like it's harder to shoot that way because you're less flexible in this motion. And so ideally, like the Kevin Durant style body is the body you'd want, you know, really strong core, very flexible, and that'll help you across the board for everything. So I feel like, and I was just thinking about this the other day. Well, I've seen every trainer in the world and do all of their stuff, strength and conditioning, and how they train. And there's a through line I've seen, at least for lower body lunges. Any type of lunge you can do is really important. It's for balance and for glute strength. Core strength is also the other thing. It's huge, huge, huge. And then hip flexibility. Those are the things I feel like are the through line that I've seen across all the board. Because there's a lot of different stuff you see. But if you can achieve those things, you know, there's probably some upper body strength you can do, and I've seen a lot of creativity there. But in reality, if it's the core strength is there, hip flexibility, and you have enough strength in your glutes, then you can be a terrific basketball player that unlocks as much of your potential as you can. Now, as far as best height for a point guard play style, I mean, the Magic Johnson mold has always been, you know, a huge advantage. Luka is in that same mold too, so is LeBron at 6'8". I erroneously called Cade Cunningham 6'8". I thought he was 6'8". I don't know why. I swore I saw something, but apparently he's only 6'6". But still, 6'6", 6'7", 6'9", those are all – that's the height you'd want to be, because you can see over the defense and then it'd be as versatile as you can. The thing that I think that people don't recognize about Magic – was traditionally, if he's guarding a point guard, a lot of the time, especially back in the 80s, he would end up being the guy guarding in the corner, and he'd be the help defense, like on a pick and roll. And who is he helping out on? A big man rolling. And what is his size? He's 6'9". He's very close to that big man, versus a point guard who would bump down or bump over for a roll man and would have almost no effect because he was a foot shorter than the guy rolling. So that was a huge advantage for the Lakers that, like, people never really made mention of. And that's another reason why at that position, if you have a bigger guy who's agile and who can handle the ball and pass, then that's a huge, huge advantage. All right, we got one more question out there I can take before we wrap up.
I got you, Coach. One,
right. All right.
Okay, real quick, if you do make that video, the guy that asked about the egalitarian offense versus the other type of plays out, just some consideration. I hope you do one, Bob and Brooks and Nets. Look what Kenny Atkinson wanted to do with AD and Kyrie, and then look what Steve Nash is doing with that team now. Kind of, that'd be a good juxtaposition, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but, you know, KD, what Atkinson wanted to do with KD would have been what he did in Golden State. It was almost the same kind of offense. And I kind of feel like what Nash did the similar stuff. He ran basically D'Antoni's offense, but I think they gave both of those guys maybe a little bit more free rein in theory to, like, ISO and do their thing, which I get because, you know, it's obviously really efficient for them too. I just worry about when they run that kind of stuff in a playoff game. And all of a sudden you're missing some of those. And every possession is really important. And those shots are really tough. And where they could have gotten something better. Like, you know what I mean? That's what gets me frustrated sometimes with guys like KD who, listen, they deserve to have a green light whenever they want to. It's just sometimes they end up and that was a thing that the Nets would have been their Achilles heel would have been down the stretch in tight games. If you get them down and they're down by 5 points, 5 minutes to go, they're going to take bad shots. And that's a problem like that, you know, on the road or whatever. They might win, but that would be the one thing you have to point to. And it's nitpicking to the nth degree on that kind of team. But that if I was a coach against them, that's the one thing I'd hang my hat on is knowing, well, they're not going to take great shots on the stretch if it's a close game, and that's going to be a shot at us winning the game.
Not only that, but they wouldn't rebound well either. That's what doomed us against the Bucks in most of the game. They destroyed us on the offensive court. Here's my question, though. Based on the 2021 season and going forward right now, what is your – which team would you like to see? What would be your most anticipated offense and defense based on what you've seen last season and going into this season?
Which team do I want to see on offense and which team do I want to see on defense?
Yeah, like who would you anticipate? Like who are you looking forward to seeing the most?
Ah, that's a really interesting question. I think I'm looking forward as a morbid curiosity or whatever for the Bulls offense. I really want to see what that's like because that should be really fun and interesting. Although there is room for disaster as well. I certainly would love to see a full power Nets team. We had a little glimpses of that. And by the way, a fully healthy Nets team running the right, you know, optimally means that Harden is the MVP. Believe it or not.
I completely agree.
Yeah, and so I want to see that. I definitely want to see the Lakers. Lakers are the most morbid fascination for me because I think everyone's expecting it to be rough and not look great. I really want to see how it works. That's going to be the most fascinating of it all. And if Coach Vogel can keep it all together, we know defensively he can do that. So the question now is, can he get the offense to function properly? You know, the Lakers weren't great offensively last year. I think. Oh, right? Am I crazy with that? Let me just quickly check my stats. Let's see. Teams, traditional, advanced, and then offensive rating. Where were the Lakers? I feel like, yeah. Does anybody here know what the Lakers ranked in offensive rating last year? It was 24th. Now, we know that the AD and LeBron missed a chunk. But I bet you if I isolated just that, I don't know if it was if it jumped that much higher. I'll look at that later because I have to look at the dates. But so that's going to be the real challenge for them, because obviously the Lakers can't compete if they're going to be they're not going to be more offensively efficient. And adding Russ doesn't guarantee that by any stretch of the imagination. So we'll see. But listen, awesome show. I'm definitely going to post this one to my podcast because this was great sound and great questions. So thank you guys for being there. Thank you guys out there for on YouTube and for the super chats as well and being part of the conversation. Don't forget on the YouTube side, if you want to join me like you did here and be on the show, download the Green Room app and you can request to come in. I bring everybody in. We all chop it up. And all you guys on the Green Room app, thank you for being part of the conversation. It was great. And don't forget, sports fans and people breakdown, we're not channel, we're a conversation. You in? Are you in, guys?
Amen.
Oh, yes, come on, sir. That's it? All right. That's what I want to hear.